Late last month, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that small corporations cannot be forced to provide their employees with certain kinds of contraceptives that offend their religious beliefs. It was the Hobby Lobby case. The ruling gives those small corporations religious freedom, just like people have under the Bill of Rights. In the Citizens United ruling a few years ago, the Supreme Court ruled that corporations have the same free speech rights as people and can spend as much money as they want on campaign contributions because that's considered speech. These rulings give corporations many of the same rights as you and I.
Frankly, strikes me as absurd.
That's Bert Newborn, a law professor at New York University and founding legal director of the school's Brennan School for Justice. Bert says the idea of corporate personhood is not at all new. The year it was first established might surprise you.
1872 was the first time the Supreme Court recognized the corporation as a person. It was a railroad corporation that was challenging some regulation of its fees, and it said that the price was so low that it was depriving them of property without due process of law. And the huge irony, it's one of the tragedies of American law, is that corporate lawyers, railroad corporation lawyers, seized the 14th Amendment as a way to protect corporations against regulation. But the country was not willing to use the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments to protect the newly freed slaves. And all of these constitutional amendments that were supposed to protect them were instead diverted to protecting corporations.
Now, critics of corporate personhood look at things like the wording of the 14th Amendment saying person and say that it's a misinterpretation of the law to hold corporations and put them into that category. What do you think?
Well, as a practical matter, that train has left the station. I mean, it is now so clear that the Supreme Court has adopted the idea that a corporation is a person for the purposes of the 14th Amendment that, frankly, you can rail against it and you can get angry about it. But as a practical matter, there's zero chance that the court will change its mind. And I'm not even sure it's wise, because to hold that a corporation is a person for the economic stuff is not crazy, because the whole reason we invented corporations was to be efficient economic engines for creating wealth and creating property. And so it makes sense to shield them from unfair regulation by giving them some constitutional rights. The trouble is that they've taken that now. They've taken the idea that corporations are persons for economic purposes and rolled it over to saying that they're persons for dignitary purposes, which frankly strikes me as absurd.
I'm speaking with New York University law professor Bert Newborn. Let's move from the 1880s more into the present day and how the principle of corporate personhood has changed to rights that we commonly associate with people, for example, religion.
Well, that's right. I mean, I've written as a sort of joke that you just better get used to having a corporate neighbor, because your corporate neighbor is going to come and put his arm around you and say, hi, neighbor. We're just the same. I pray like you. And that's P-R-A-Y, not P-R-E-Y. I mean, I pray like you. I speak like you. I have all the dignity that you have. I mean, a corporation is an artificial thing. It doesn't exist. It exists only because we create a legal set of rules that recognize it. It's not like a human being. Corporations don't have dignity. They have economic efficiency, and we should protect their economic efficiency. But the use of the Constitution to give them dignity is crazy.
And yet this Hobby Lobby ruling by the Supreme Court last month allows small corporations to deny some birth control coverage in their insurance plans to employees based on religious objection.
No question about it. That's the effect. Now, the court was careful. Alito, in writing his opinion, was very careful in saying, we're not giving this right to the corporation. We're giving this right to the very small shareholders of these corporations, many of whom are family-owned, who have just adopted the corporate form as a convenient way of running their business. But it's still a group of people who are doing this, and we're giving the rights to the people, not the corporation. That's why they didn't go all the way and say big corporations can do this, because it's impossible to have that kind of story about a big corporation. And so Hobby Lobby doesn't go all the way to saying that corporations have religious rights. It holds it to very, very small corporations owned by a very small set of intimately connected shareholders.
Well, how about a small florist, Bert Newborn? We had a pretty famous case here of a florist being taken to court by the Attorney General for discriminating against a gay couple by refusing to do flower arrangements for their wedding. Would the Hobby Lobby decision mean in cases like that, that this small business, the Washington florist, has a religious right as a business to deny?
It definitely would not. I know that the religious right is using Hobby Lobby as a megaphone to shout that they now have the freedom to discriminate, but the court was so careful in saying the only reason we are recognizing this in Hobby Lobby is that there is no cost by recognizing the exemption. Now, in the florist situation, what would happen is a religious florist would want to shift the cost of his beliefs onto a consumer who was not then permitted to do business the same way that anybody else can. That's a clear cost that the court will not permit. The court will not permit the shifting of the cost of someone's religious belief and to put that cost on someone else. Anything that has above zero cost is not covered by Hobby Lobby.
Bert, to wrap up here, let's do a side-by-side comparison. What legal rights do I, as a person, have compared to what a corporation personhood rights are?
You have the right to speak freely, and so do corporations. You have the right to engage in the free exercise of religion, and so to very small corporations. You have the right to be free from unreasonable search and seizure, and so do corporations. You have the right to a jury trial, and so do corporations. You have a right to be protected against double jeopardy, and so do corporations. You have a right to be protected against cruel and unusual punishment, and so do corporations. You have a right to be protected against deprivation of property without due process of law, and so do corporations. And finally, you have a right to equal protection of the laws, and so do corporations. The only right that you have that they don't have is that you have the right to protection against self-incrimination, and they don't have it yet. And the right that I can't believe this is going to happen, but I've actually heard people starting to talk about it. You now have a right to keep and bear arms. And now they're talking about corporations having the right to keep and bear arms. Now that's scary.
So what does that indicate to you, to someone who studied the beginning of corporations, about the future of American corporations?
Well, actually, it has both it may have actually a very dangerous idea. Corporations are excellent vehicles for economic development for two reasons. Because the two reasons are linked. They're linked because there's a wall between the corporation and the shareholder. So, for example, if the corporation goes bust, let's say you start a small business and the corporation goes bust and it has lots of creditors, those creditors can't get your personal money. The only thing they can get is the corporate assets. It's called limited liability, and it's why people create corporations, to shield their personal money from the problems if the corporation goes bust. And secondly, one corporation can own another corporation, so that what you can do is control where you behave in a corporation, to control who can regulate you, what your taxes will be. You can manipulate which corporation does what, even though they're all controlled from the top. Now, Hobby Lobby endangers that in some remarkable way, because in order for Alito to say that the corporation had this religious exemption, he had to say, no, it's not the corporation, it's the individual shareholders. They are the real people here, not the corporation. This is the first time in American legal history that the Supreme Court has poked a hole in the corporate veil. And piercing the corporate veil, if you can pierce it from the shareholder side for religion, why can't you pierce it from the creditor side or from the IRS's side for the purposes of enforcement? And we may now be in a position where corporations are going to get what they wished for, and sorry that they wished for it.
Bert, if we're going to consider corporations as people for the purpose of rights that they have, does that also burden them with additional responsibilities that people have if they're going to be adopting it?
Well, that's true. And in fact, corporations, this was a debate at the beginning of the 20th century. Corporations can be found guilty of crime. Now, of course, the problem is, how do you put a corporation in jail? All it means when you punish a corporation criminally is that you give them a higher fine, and maybe a little bad publicity. Until we find a way to impose sanctions on corporations that are the functional equivalent of putting somebody in jail, maybe putting them out of business for a period of time, the same way you would put a person out of business if you put them in jail. So it may well be that if corporations want to be treated just like the rest of us, then they better be prepared to go to jail just like the rest of us.
Bert Newborn, New York University law professor, founding legal director of the school's Brennan Center for Justice.